Before we start, I wanted to let you know that I've partnered with really awesome companies that create top-notch products that care about their customers, the environment, and what they put in their products. Organic, non-GMO, third-party tested. I've negotiated exclusive offers and coupons with them, especially for you, my listeners. Head on over to www.healyounaturally.com/resources and check all of my discount coupons. For example, Real Mushrooms. The code is HEALYOU, that is HEALYOU, for a 20% off coupon site-wide. BioTrust always has sales and coupons going, so click the link that says BioTrust offers below or in that area. I will also link my coupons wherever you find a podcast. Welcome to the Heal You Natural Wellness Podcast. I am Astrid, your host. This episode number 37 is about the latest research on the root causes of mental or brain health, toxic mold, neuroinflammation, nervous system dysregulation, trauma and the link to mental health, the microbiome, and much more. And most importantly, how to heal holistically. Everyone, today my guest is Brendan Vermeyer, also known as the Holistic Savage. Brendan is a mental and metabolic health scientist and researcher, functional medicine educator, writer, and speaker. He is a board-certified holistic health practitioner, master nutrition coach, master personal trainer, USAW sports performance coach, and CrossFit trainer. He began his career as a personal trainer and nutrition coach at the age of 18 after disappointingly being medically discharged from the United States Navy SEAL training pipeline due to an injury. After being exposed to the power of functional lab testing in the start of his career, he began intensely pursuing that as a career path, which has led him to be widely regarded as one of the top leading experts in metabolic health and functional education. He is the proud owner and founder of Metabolic Solutions Institute for Functional Health and Fitness Practitioners and the creator of the Functional Mental Health Practitioner Certificate course. He is also the founder of the Metabolic Solutions Research and Education Foundation, a not-for-profit foundation dedicated to changing the way the world views mental health through advancing the science of mental health dysfunction. He's also the creator of the Mental MAP, or the Mental Map, a cutting-edge lab panel for mental health. Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Healing Natural Wellness Podcast. Today, I'm reopening or relaunching the podcast with Brendan, the Holistic Savage. And I'm very excited because we have phenomenal topics to talk about. Very relevant right now because a lot of people are dealing with mental health. And especially after these 2 years that have been very challenging. And sadly, I believe because of what transpired, a lot of people are dealing with it. So we're going to have really good conversations. Brendan, welcome to the Healing Natural Wellness Podcast.
Thanks for having me, my friend. It's great to finally connect, you know, face-to-face through Zoom. We've been kind of IG buddies for a while, so it's great to see Astrid, and I appreciate the opportunity, and I'm excited to see what all we talk about today, and obviously the audience gets to be the beneficiary of our conversation.
Absolutely. I'm super excited to also finally see you face-to-face. I admire your work. You're amazing. You are definitely changing the world. I hope you know it, of mental health with all of your information. Followers love you because I see a lot of them follow you too, and they check the stories and everything. So anyway, without further ado, let's get right into it. So Brendan, why don't you briefly tell us about your journey on mental health, educating others about healing mental health holistically, and you are the creator of the Mental Map, one of its kind in the industry regarding the newest functional lab tests.
Yeah, it's been a pretty crazy journey. You know, every time I get interviewed and people always want to ask kind of the cliff notes of the story. And it's like, how do you succinctly encapsulate what has really been the story of my entire life? And especially You know, I've been doing my work professionally, my career. I'm 12 years into my career, and I just turned 30 a couple of weeks ago. So I started young, which I'm really glad that I did. I had no time to waste. There's a lot of work to be done. And I was always, you know, I feel very blessed to have always been very clear with my purpose and my drive. And obviously that has organically evolved and shifted over time, because when I was 17 years old, you know, I was a senior in high school. And at that point in time, my dream and my life goal and my perceived subjective sense of purpose was to become a Navy SEAL. So after graduating from high school, which I will say I was first put on a psychiatric drug when I was 17, my senior year of high school, I was just doing a physical for wrestling and high school sports. And, you know, I think I mentioned something about seasonal affective disorder because winter was coming up and feeling a little bit depressed maybe. So without any lab testing done, no blood work, no any sort of evaluation really, or even referral to a mental health professional, it's just like, well, hey, 17-year-old kid trying to figure out your life, like here's Zoloft, you know. And of course, these days now we have all these stern black box warnings, but we hand out these drugs like Halloween candy. And I'm sure we'll get into that more, but it's an important detail to point out of like, okay, that was senior year. And then I graduate high school, qualified for the Navy SEAL program, signed a 6-year Navy SEAL contract. And then about halfway through boot camp, they found I had an inguinal hernia that they deemed a pre-existing injury. Therefore, not their liability, not their problem. So medical discharge. And it felt like my whole life goal, life dream, life purpose, you know, was really taken away from me. And that was extremely hard. I actually just started working with a new therapist recently, and I was telling her this story with starting up our work together. And, you know, whereas I kind of bypass it because I'm so used to telling my story in a very non-vulnerable way. I'm just sharing to the audience and telling what happened. Whereas then my therapist is like, wow, that would have been really hard to have your purpose. And I was like, yeah, it hurt.
Hello. That's exactly what started the whole thing, right?
Yeah.
You're such a, you know, you're such a young age where we're so vulnerable to trauma. I've learned that, like, correct me if I'm wrong. Like we're always vulnerable to trauma, but late teens, early 20s, I think, because we don't know a lot about this, right? Like about trauma in life, you know, we're just learning, and then your dream is crushed and you don't know which way to go. And the first thing you do is like medication.
Right. I mean, I could, you know, literally lecture all day about the shortcomings of our conventional approach to, you know, health, mental health care in particular. And so after the Navy SEAL thing fell through, I was always very passionate about health and fitness and nutrition. So I started as a personal trainer and nutrition coach. I was kind of at this crossroads. I had spent about a year trying to get back into the special operations program, and that wasn't getting anywhere. And my mental health was getting worse and worse and worse. So I needed something else. And that's when I got certified as a personal trainer and nutrition coach, because it was either that or go to college, which I didn't want to do. Academia, college kid life didn't resonate with me at all. That's not how I learn. I'm really an autodidact. So once I started my career as a health and fitness professional, I mean, I just fell in love with the science of human health. And really at that point, it was more about metabolic health, metabolic performance, which, you know, that being my background, I sometimes almost am caught off guard when a lot of other people are like, well, wait a second, what does metabolic mean? Can you explain that? Right. And it's weird now because these days they're starting to become this movement of metabolic psychiatry where, you know, psychiatry is starting to wake up and realize, oh, well, 88% of Americans are metabolically ill and our drugs do nothing to improve their metabolic health. So, you know, they're starting to talk in terms of metabolic psychiatry, which is great. But for me, it's like, gosh, you guys are like 20 years behind.
Late,
and so, you know, this is where through my institute, my functional mental health practitioner certificate program, I now have psychiatrists and various types of doctors and clinicians coming to learn from me, because it's like, okay, you can't really successfully treat mental illness without cultivating metabolic health and resilience. And so that's kind of the big missing piece. And I think it really is my background that has given me actually an advantage in the functional medicine space where, now I'm kind of doing my thing. So it's been a long journey, and there's so much I left out. I mean, there was a suicide attempt in there that I didn't talk about. There was,
I'm sorry to hear,
you
that.
Know, my ex-fiance killing herself a couple years ago that I didn't talk about. So I have a very long and arduous journey with mental health and obviously the metabolic professional. And so it's really satisfying for me to kind of see what my platform and my brand has become, because it's been such a gradual evolutionary process. And I feel like I now have it nailed down. Like I know what I'm all about. I'm doing the work. I have the branding figured out. And now I feel like I am making a dent, but it took a long time, very long time and a lot of work to get here.
Wow. That's a next, you know, pretty incredible story. I know you left out. I'm familiar with, some of your journey because, I started following you, a few months ago, maybe last year. And, you know, the same type of work as the holistic psychologist, I had her on my podcast like years ago. And I was fascinated by that because what I do also, like we want to address, always get to the root cause first. I know that you talk about root causes and don't get fixated on that, but I believe, you know, prevention and also with all, you know, lifestyle and the whole, what we always mention, right? Like broken record, sleep, lifestyle, like diet, exercise, fitness, meditation, try to like stress management, like the whole, all those pillars. Right. And so, I think it's fascinating that, you are teaching actually practitioners, which is so amazing, Brandon, because you know, this is going to, is such a shift, you know, in how they are going to start treating people with this. It could be debilitating. I've been exposed to also people with severe anxiety or what, as I recently learned, the OCD bully type of thing, which I had never heard of. And when I read about it, it's like, oh my gosh, you know, like how do you live with that? But, you know, that's why we're here, to try to spread the knowledge. And so I'm going to go jumping right into the first question. Sure. So the health of, you know, our microbiome directly influences how susceptible or resilient we will be to the effects of trauma. I got this from one of your posts. Why don't you tell us about the importance of the microbiome for mental health?
But what you said right before, you know, kind of what popped in my head is, and this is something I've been thinking a lot about, which is because you talked about the OCD kind of bully thing. And I think one of the issues currently at hand is we're so busy trying to define mental health disorders and personality disorders and identifying with those mental health disorders and personality disorders that we're actually failing and overlooking to define what mental health even means. You know, what does it mean to be mentally healthy? What does mental health look like for you? If we're also obsessed with, well, you know, what label does my behavioral pattern fit into? Is that the OCD bully? Is that narcissism? Is it borderline? Is it anxiety? Is it depression? Is it bipolar? Right. So I think, you know, we have to really define for ourselves what mental health means and, you know, get to those root cause factors that might be moving us further away from that definition of mental health. And that's where, you know, the microbiome, I can kind of, at least for the clinical side, the esoteric and philosophical side of my work is a little bit different. But as far as more of the clinical scientific side, I really do take a very metabolic and microbiome approach to mental health for the most part. I mean, there's a lot of other things going on there too, but a lot of these other kind of root cause topics, whether it's like histamine and stealth infections or, you know, MCAS or whatever, all these fancy things people love to squawk about. But if we can really build up the metabolic health and resilience, as well as improve the terrain of that inner garden of life that is the microbiome, you know, the microbiome is just the compilation of all of these different archaea, bacteria, parasites, viruses, fungi, you know, and it's in us, it's all around us. I mean, we live in a microbial world. We are more microbes than humans. We have more microbial cells than human cells. And those microbes influence literally every aspect of our physiology. And so it starts opening that conversation around, you know, germ theory, which is really what the entire Western healthcare system is built on, is germ theory. It's a theory, you know, versus then terrain theory. And it's like, well, the truth is in the middle. But I think one of the biggest issues is humans as a species, as a collective, we have become the dysbiotic organism on this planet. We're not living in symbiotic harmony with the microbes, let alone, you know, other animals and plants and fungi. We're not living in harmony with nature. And we have this, like, you know, sterilize ourselves, sterilize the world. So that's really kind of an extinction event of the microbiome. But yeah, that post that you were referring to, of now we have research emerging showing how actually the health of the microbiome has a large impact in determining how, you know, a young person will respond to early life trauma because of the psychoneuroendocrine immunological axes, and the gut-brain axis is what it's more simplistically called, of how these microbes dramatically influence our metabolic health, our immune function, and our neurological cognitive functioning as well. Everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. You know, and when you were saying I know my friend Catherine Clinton, she talks a lot about tend to your terrain. And I've always been a firm believer that, for example, a walk in nature is so healing. I've been doing it for a long time. Even during COVID, I used to take little videos at the beach with my son or walking. I have a trail that it's my favorite. It's very soothing. And a lot of people saying, why are you out there? Like, it's, you know, people that drank the Kool-Aid. So it's like we call it. And it's like, why are you walking in nature? It's like, why not? Why are you in the house? You know, it's like, get out. And so with everything that just happened with the whole virus thing and like that, the worst part is isolation. I know that that's one thing that is detrimental for brain health, for everything in general. And so also the hand sanitizers and all the stuff that are full of endocrine disruptors or toxins. So like what you're saying, you know, sanitizing and not being connected to nature, to other areas. Does that play a major role in mental health? What percentage would you say that the role that it plays, would you say?
It's hard to put an exact number on it. I mean, I would say in between microbiome health as one subject and metabolic health as kind of a second subject that is technically separate, but then those two are heavily interacting. The microbiome directly impacts our metabolic health and literally every aspect of our physiology. But between those two, I would say that's like, I don't know, like 90-95% of the equation.
Like, I mean, just 100%, you know, let's just go with that.
Yeah, it's kind of most of it, you know, and it, you have to like reverse engineer of how did we ever get here in the first place? Because you think about like, you know, World War One and the development of the first antibiotic and penicillin and life-saving medicine. And right, because like, obviously, you know, we've gotten too far from nature. That's the punchline, because everybody's going to want to freak out of like, okay, cool. So how do I test my microbiome health? Like what stool test? And then, you know, what probiotic do I take to make it all go away? Right. Like what's the test? What's the pill? What's the protocol so I can keep living the life that I'm living? And it's like, no, we're talking about a lifestyle change. We're talking about an environmental change. We're talking about a collective awakening and a paradigm shift. We're talking about the fact that if humans don't get their shit together, we're going to go extinct within 100 years because of our own self-induced destruction. So, right. You know, there's a correction that has to occur, a returning to nature, a returning to symbiosis. And we're starting to see hints of this in pop culture. And I was just watching like a Marvel movie the other day, and it showed like futuristic New York with gardens built into the skyscrapers. I'm like,
that would be phenomenal.
Like that's what it's going to go. It's either that or you know, apocalypse. Right. Yes. So I do think we will get to a more hybridized sort of modern technology and luxury and comfort and security mixed with more of a natural, because, you know, like, we're not trying to return to like primal days where we have to hunt and gather and, oh, you got an infection, but, you know, because antibiotics are the devil, like, we're just going to let you die of an infection. So it's train theory and germ theory. Like, we've gotten too lost in germ theory for the past few decades. Train theory is starting to get really, really popular. And it's like, well, we have to combine the best of both. You know, how do we cultivate a diverse and healthy microbiome, not just within our gut or on our bodies, but the microbiome of the planet? You know, this is where regenerative agriculture is a huge part of this movement and conversation as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, rather than, you know, people might ask like, great, how do I grow a healthy garden? It's like, well, eat real food, stop putting crap in your body, and maybe take a probiotic and spend more time in nature. But the punchline is, we need to return to nature. Like, we will restore the microbiome of the planet and ourselves the more closely we live with nature ultimately.
Absolutely. And like, I always tell people, like, I have a little highlight on garden. Like, I learned how to garden. I have a small, I don't know, 20 by 20 bed in a community garden. And I started doing organic gardening. I learned about companion planting, the pest study, you know, beneficial and blah, blah, blah. And it wasn't really that hard. And I still garden. I get a nice, decent, I used my last red onion in February. I always tell people, like, red onion. So it is doable. You know, do you have to put in the time? A little bit. But you know what? You're investing in your health, and you're also saving money, and you're learning how to be self-sustainable. Self-sustainable. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So I have a question for you regarding the antibiotics and all of that, because I'm curious. The microbiome is a very delicate, you know, combination of good. I don't like to say good and bad bacteria, but that's the easiest thing right now. Sure. So when we take antibiotics, I'm actually very, because of what I know, and I consume kefir, I make my own, you know, stuff like that. So when I do know that sometimes when you take a round of antibiotics, it could disturb the microbiome for up to 2 years. Yeah. So when we're talking about that, you know, especially, and I always wonder, like, you know, if you are in a situation, and I don't, obviously we can do give medical advice, and let alone myself, then I'm not a doctor or anything. So if people say, well, I'm in a situation where I need antibiotics, in my opinion, is like, if it's like a dire situation where you are, but anyway, I want you to tell me what are your thoughts on antibiotics, especially with, I'm thinking autistic individuals, or someone who has severe mental health compromised, which is usually linked to the microbiome.
Absolutely. I think the biggest problem is we're overly reliant on antibiotics and pharmacological agents in general. You know, my whole like mantra that I live by is the greatest treatment is prevention, and the greatest message of all is teach people how to not need it. You know, that should be the point.
Yeah.
And America is really failing miserably in that department. The healthcare system is failing miserably in teaching people how to not need medicine. We're all extremely over-reliant. And in a lot of ways, a lot of the pharmaceuticals, it's just kind of enabling our own self-destructive behaviors, because it's like, no, you don't actually have to learn how to be healthy naturally, because we'll just give you a pill and then another pill for the side effects of that pill, and then a pill for this other thing. And, you know, it just compounds. And so there was that report recently that we saw that with, you know, health expenditure per capita versus life expectancy, and how out of all the countries, you know, on earth, like, we're the ones that are sucking, you know, the worst, that like we spend more on healthcare than anybody else, and yet we're the least healthy. Like, it just doesn't make sense. You know, we can't keep doubling down and thinking that pharmaceuticals are going to allow us to keep living the toxic pro-inflammatory lifestyle and killing the environment the way that we are. We actually have to really reevaluate how we're living and, mm-hmm. and what we're doing. And with antibiotics, I mean, hey, look, like, if somebody has, you know, let's say Lyme disease, and they have an active Borrelia infection, or, you know, they're septic or something, and their, you know, white blood cells and CRP are through the roof, and they're going into septic shock, and they have SIRS, and like, they're going to die. Like, yeah, absolutely take the antibiotics. There's definitely times, but then it's like, you know, you can't even get any dental work done without them giving you antibiotics prophylactically. Like, well, there's nothing wrong with you right now. You don't have an infection. Just you're taking the antibiotics prophylactically. So it's like, so I'm dropping a nuclear bomb into my microbiome prophylactically, like just in case. I'm wiping out all of my good flora, like just in case something bad might happen. Like that's where the issue really is. And of course, mm-hmm. the over-reliance on the antimicrobial drugs. Now, you know, we're having issues with superbugs because the microbes are adapting and becoming more resilient to the pharmacological agent. So it's just one of those, that's the tricky part about where we're at is, hey, you know, absolutely, there are times that those antimicrobial drugs are going to be absolutely necessary, but the goal is to not really need them. And for the most part, you know, pretty healthy, metabolically resilient people generally don't need them and aren't getting sick enough. And so there's a whole conversation around just immunosuppression and immune resilience, which obviously pretty relevant these days.
Absolutely. And I always tell people, like, and I do it all the time. They're like, I have a biological dentist now, but in the past, I'm going to go and they're like, well, you know, we did this procedure and going on antibiotics. And I'm like, no, I'm not. He's like, no, what do you mean? What? No, I don't need antibiotics. If anything happens, then we'll look into it. But you be your own advocate. You don't have to say yes to everything when you go to the hospital, but that's a whole other topic. All right, let's move on to our next question. Thank you, Brandon, for answering that. Let's talk about stealth infections. What are they and why are they detrimental and commonly overlooked cause of mental health dysfunction for those of our listeners that are not aware?
Yeah, absolutely. Stealth infections is kind of the term that we use a lot in the functional medicine space. And it's really a nebulous, like most of the terminology we use in the functional medicine space is extremely ambiguous and nebulous. It's like, what does that even mean? You know, I think that's part of like the marketing strategy for a lot of functional medicine people is if we confuse them and scare them, they will give us their money. And it's just like, well, that's bad business.
That's why I know you don't want it's sad because we do have really, really good people and educators and functional medicine practitioners in our industry. But we also know that some of them are just like, you know, I mean, you got to make a living. Say, well, why is it so expensive? Because we put a lot of work into it, maybe. And also we need to live, like, you know, it's not free. But anyway, I'll let you answer the question.
I mean, there's a lot to unpack there because functional medicine isn't very functional if nobody can access it or afford it. You know what I mean?
So it's exactly.
There's work to be done there.
A lot of work. I've signed petitions. So, chiropractors are now part of the network, but I've signed petitions. I've been like doing a little bit of advocacy with other movements to try to get naturopathic medic functional medicine in the system. But let's go back to the question.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of infrastructure development there. But with stealth infections, generally referring to, typically it's thought of as like the Lyme disease, so Borrelia, Babesia, Mycoplasma, Bartonella, it could really refer to a lot of other pathogenic microbes then might be kind of hiding from the immune system and are not easily detectable. Could even really include parasites as well. I mean, you know, it's not like stealth infection is a clearly defined, you know, label. It's sort of just loosely referring to any sort of, and then of course you kind of have to like qualify, well, how do you really even know if you have a stealth infection? Like, is it because somebody pushed on your arm and you tested weak while holding a vial of water, therefore you have some crazy infection? Don't get me started on that one, you know.
I haven't heard of that one. My God.
What? You haven't heard of muscle testing? Oh, no.
I don't remember, but I have heard of all the ones. It's like, wow, really?
Yeah, I'm going to just set that down and back away slowly so I don't get myself in trouble with my friends. But, you know, with let's use Borrelia as the typical kind of prototypical example, because Borrelia, which I have a little Borrelia stuffed animal over here.
Oh my God, you do not have a stuffed
animal. No, yeah. Let me. I got my giant microbes on the shelf over there.
OMG. You are Candida. Definitely hardcore. I would not have one of those.
They're fun. I'm building the collection. But with Borrelia, so it's kind of this like corkscrew spirochete bacteria. And of course, you know, the disease, Lyme disease, awful. I wouldn't wish that upon anybody.
Oh.
But, you know, one of the, Borrelia was kind of the first to start being referred to as a stealth infection. The reason why is it can actually change its surface protein engines from the and it hides behind biofilm and does a lot of crazy things. It makes it very hard to detect it in the body and identify it. And of course, then it also makes it a little bit more challenging to treat. So stealth, just referring to how these pathogens can be really, really sneaky and hide under the surface. Oh yeah. So just with the stealth infections being really hard to test for. And I think one of the tricks, and I try to bring some education around this, is how do we really qualify a stealth infection? Because I think one of the biggest problems that I see in my industry that I am very, very vocal about is a lot of times in functional medicine, these practitioners are using new, fancy, somewhat experimental, not always clearly clinically significant data, and kind of testing for the presence of something that could be scary or damaging to the body. And a lot of times they're skipping the part where they're actually assessing to see, is there any dysfunction within the body's physiology? And that doesn't make sense. So follow this, where, like, let's say, you know, you test for Borrelia and Lyme disease with like PCR, or you do a stool test and you do the PCR analysis to look at all the different microbes, genetic material in that stool test. You do a urinary mycotoxin test to look for the presence of these mycotoxins in the urine, or glyphosate, or, you know, looking at heavy metals excreted in the hair. You're looking for the presence of something that could be damaging to the body in these different, you know, samples, urine, blood, mm-hmm. stool, hair. But you have to actually assess the physiology primarily through blood work, primarily, right. not exclusively. Because if the physiology is not disturbed and it looks pretty flawless, it doesn't really matter what presence of something bad, like your physiology is resilient to that. So I see that as this recurring problem in the industry, where a lot of functional providers, they're not assessing physiology, but they are testing for the presence of scary things. And it's like, but if the scary thing isn't disturbing your physiology, all that's going to do is scare you and freak you out. Like, guess what? We're all exposed to glyphosate. Guess what? We're all exposed to stealth infections. Guess what? Like, we're all exposed to all of these bad things. But if it's not hurting you, you know, and you're not trusting your body's detoxification systems and, you know, immune system and everything, now you're just freaking yourself out, right?
Right. Wow. So that's pretty interesting. So are you saying that, I hope I understood correctly, if you are fairly healthy, or if your immune system, same thing, it's functioning properly, you may have, well, yeah, you know, you may have a stealth infection or parasites or whatever, and you still continue to function. Is that what you're saying? Like, if you're fairly healthy, even if you, I'm thinking Lyme disease, like with the spirochetes, with the, what is it? It's not Prevotella. What is it called? The Lyme disease bacterium?
The Borrelia.
Borrelia. If you, I'm petrified. I adore hiking and we do it all the time, but I'm always so petrified and I use whatever, you know, natural spray. But if you were to get bit by a tick and you develop Lyme disease, if you're healthy enough, is your immune system going to, you know, be able to fight it on its own? Or do you for that particular, I'm referring to that particular, infection.
Yeah. I mean, it's bio-individualized and context matters. My major point being, I see this huge issue with people kind of having this hypochondriac neurotic approach. And I think there's a lot of psychological things going on there. And it's that, you know, desire for a sense of control and an impartial and uncontrollable reality. But I think there can be damage done when people are doing testing that looks for the presence of something bad, if they're skipping the part where they're assessing to see, well, how well is your body functioning? In my opinion, there's no point in doing these root cause tests to look for something scary if there's not clear indication that we should go look for. So follow this, where, like, conventional healthcare, you know, they assess physiology, they don't look for root causes. But then functional medicine, they look for root causes without assessing physiology a lot of the times. And it's like, well, we have to do both. Like if the physiology is disturbed and, you know, you're experiencing that through the language of symptoms and health complaints, okay, so then we have to reverse engineer of why is your physiology disturbed? What is disturbing your physiology? And then we might look into some possible root cause factors contributing that. But I see too often in the functional medicine space, consumers jump to looking for the presence of something bad without assessing the physiology, which doesn't make any sense at all.
That makes total sense. You know, it's true. If you're not healthy to begin with, how are you going to be able to fight, you know, pathogens or infections or anything like that? So yeah, that's part of the root cause, I would say, right? Definitely getting to the root cause. That would be one root cause.
Well, yeah. And one root cause, right? We have to be talking in terms of root causes and root cause contributing factors. Because even like, I think the root cause paradigm has kind of gotten a little out of control, where it's almost like selling people some ambiguous sort of fictitious root cause. And then it's like, who can argue of like, no, that's not your root cause. This is your root cause. And people get lost in that. People get sucked down these like root cause rabbit holes. And, you know, we need backup folks holistically and more focus on building up metabolic and immunological health and resilience. Like when you really support the body, it knows how to handle the toxins. It knows how to handle the pathogens. We need to support it in doing that, not get too carried away chasing, you know, these root cause rabbit holes.
Yeah, I heard that in one of your lives. And I was like, what do you mean? I've been talking about root cause since circa 2010 when I created my website, but it makes total sense. Thank you for answering that. Now, Liz, talk about, you had another post that was really good. What are the top 10 most common and prevalent root causes of brain inflammation, and how can we prevent them?
Absolutely. So that was a fun post I put up recently, because certainly I'm not trying to, criticize the root cause ideology too much, because there is a lot of validity there, but we just have to be reasonable with how we qualify root, also more of an esoteric ones. For example, if you have a, if you don't have a sense of purpose in life, you know, I think that's probably going to contribute to some brain inflammation. But, you know, measurable physiological inflammation in Americans, at least, are going to be things like stress, gut brain axis dysfunction, and microbiomas, hyperglycemia and dyslipidemia, some of the standard characteristics of metabolic illness. So things like homocystinuria, the high blood sugar, high blood pressure, increased body fat, social isolation, trauma. And then of course there's some of the more, you know, typical root cause things like the environmental toxicants like heavy metals and bisphenols and glyphosate, mycotoxins, as well as some of those stealth infections that could be very relevant for some. You know, I'm not trying to undermine stealth infections by any means. It's a huge, huge issue and getting worse because of the immunosuppression that metabolic illness drives in this country. So there's certainly a lot of, you know, kind of boxes we have to check when we're really trying to alleviate somebody's neuroinflammatory burden.
That's very interesting. So where I was getting, it's like one of your posts, like you were talking, it was, let's see, the most common ones that you were talking about were like, oh, you already mentioned all that. It's trauma. Yeah. Okay. Mitochondrial dysfunction and oxidative stress. Mm-hmm. That's something that I am not too clear about. And maybe, I apologize, guys, maybe other people are. When it comes to mitochondrial dysfunction and oxidative stress, what exactly can we address or change when it comes to the mitochondria, or to make it better?
Yeah, I mean, it's really more of a lifestyle, diet, fitness, environmental circumstances type of conversation. It's not like there's really medications or pill. I mean, we can obviously throw a lot of great mitochondrial supplements to try to improve mitochondrial functioning, but you know, we have to back up of like, but why does somebody have mitochondrial dysfunction to begin with? Which a lot of times, you know, we have to be thinking in terms of mitochondrial density, people that are active and exercise and, you know, are stimulating mitogenesis or the formation of new mitochondria, they're going to have a lot more mitochondrial density. They're going to have a lot more efficient mitochondria. Whereas things like these environmental toxicants, the heavy metals and the, you know, bisphenols and the glyphosates and toluene and paraben and all of these environmental toxins are very disruptive to mitochondrial function. Or if we're not eating a nutrient dense whole food diet, right? You know, the American public is overfed yet malnourished, you know, too many empty calories, not enough nutrients. You know, what makes the mitochondria function to burn fuel and produce ATP? It's all micronutrient driven, right? So what I love about a lot of these subjects, particularly mitochondrial dysfunction, is it's more of a nutrition and fitness and sleep and stress management and cleaning up
lifestyle.
Your environment. It's not so much about like, yes, there, I mean, I have a whole list of some of my favorite mitochondrial supplements, but there's no point in supplementing if the foundational pieces aren't there. And especially, you know, exercise is in sunlight, you know, is probably the single best way to really boost mitochondrial function. So when, you know, when our mitochondria are becoming dysfunctional and cranking out a lot of reactive oxygen species and driving that oxidative stress in the body and not producing adequate cellular energy, everything starts failing. You know, every biochemical reaction in the body is heavily dependent on that cellular energy. So, you know, even depression and mental health disorders, now we're really seeing there's a large contributing factor with it's a bioenergetic impairment in the brain driven by mitochondrial dysfunction. So, but again, it's like the sciencey stuff is cool, but it points us right back to the foundations of lifestyle and nutrition and exercise and time in nature and stressing less, sleeping more, all the good things.
Gotcha. Thank you so much for, you know, adding to that question. Mm-hmm. So let's jump right to the next one. Maternal immune activation, toxins, pathogens, exposure, and inflammation have been linked to ADD, ADHD, and autism in their children. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about that? Because that's a very dear topic of mine.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, certainly if we're talking about a woman growing a human, you know, growing a sentient being inside of them, whatever is going on with the mother is going to directly impact every aspect of the child and of the fetus, particularly the neurodevelopment. So, you know, my area of, you know, expertise and kind of my claim to fame is my work around microglial activation, which really refers to the activation of the immune system in our brain, in our central nervous system, which is primarily, not exclusively, but primarily regulated by these microglial cells, which are really just the primary white blood cell of the central nervous system. And these microglial cells are really both the guardians and the architects of the central nervous system. So they help the nervous system and neurological tissues develop and help create our neural networks. So, you know, we're talking about brain formation, really. And the microbiome is probably the primary thing that influences the maturation and activity of the immune system in the body and the brain. So these microglial cells are heavily influenced by the microbiome, which of course we get our microbiome really from our mother. So especially like if you're born via C-section or something. So that whole immune activation in the mom thing, a good example would be if you had, you know, let's say a standard American woman that has, you know, a lot of these typical metabolic illness characteristics and profiles, and they, let's say they get pregnant and maybe they get COVID while they're pregnant, right? They pick up some sort of infection or immunological challenge that initiates this inflammatory cascade. That's going to directly alter the immune system that's developing and maturing even within the fetus and the developing brain of the fetus. So we do actually see that, you know, whether, you know, it's that analogy or a woman with like chronic Lyme disease or an autoimmune condition, you know, somebody that had a woman that has an immune challenge and this elevated, you know, cytokine storm and inflammatory challenge that, you know, it's like, how could a baby's brain form properly and their neurodevelopment goes properly if the mother's body is on fire and inflamed, right? Like that just doesn't even make sense. So, you know, we don't even need to be a super, you know, cellularly technical to just recognize, well, yeah, if the mother is inflamed, that's definitely going to cause some miswiring of the nervous system of the offspring, which dramatically increases the risk of autism, ADD, ADHD, or some sort of neurodevelopmental delay or challenge.
That's petrifying. You know, and I've always spoken about this, especially like when you say, you know, if your child was born via C-section, unfortunately mine was, I fought to the last minute. And I think he needed to go home. You know, it was 5, end of the day. And I fought and I said, no, I'll wait. And then, of course, you know, all the his heartbeat, you know, you're going to compromise his breathing, blah, blah. And I look at everything and he's fine. So they wanted to do a C-section. Eventually, I had to, you know, go through with it. And so, but then what I did, one thing that I wanted to mention is, which is very important. I don't know if you would agree with that, with when you are carrying a child. And I stopped doing all this. I started preparing myself way before I was going to conceive, you know, with a healthier, I always try to, you know, lead a healthier lifestyle, organic, less chemicals, blah, blah. So when I see women like with, you know, that you want to do your hair, it's fine. You want to do your nails, you want to look pretty. That's fine. But keep in mind that all of those dyes and, you know, I have an organic or holistic hairstylist. So they use certain types of, you know, dyes and shampoos, everything is organic, less chemicals, blah, blah. So would you say that those are xenoestrogens, right? Those, the color, the hair coloring, the nails, and if you're pregnant and you're in the salon inhaling all that, just take a break from that. I think the health of your child is so much more, it's more important than potentially, you know, just use a natural nail polish, right? Oh, I want to emphasize, and I want Brandon to potentially either back me up or correct me if I'm wrong. These things are detrimental to yourself for starters, but also to your child.
Oh, absolutely. It's some really alarming data and statistics emerging. I think autism's like 1 in 45 children these days. And I mean, it's skyrocketing. And so neurodevelopmental disorders might be kind of the thing that hopefully saves us all in the sense of it gets us to wake up because we're realizing, ooh, we as a population are not producing healthy, thriving children. And right. they are the future of this country, yes. Right? And so that's actually, if you plot out some of that data and the trajectory over time, like that doesn't play out well for us. Like if we're producing children that have developmental, you know, disabilities, if you will, how does that play out from a societal productivity? Like it doesn't, you know, the cost of healthcare goes up more and more, productivity goes down.
Yeah.
It just, that's where you kind of start getting to the collapse of humanity if you play that out for too long. And so, you know, I don't think there's any more kind of sensitive subject than the health of our children, the health of our future generations, and absolutely the radiation that we're blasting them with EMF and the toxins that they're being exposed to mm-hmm. in utero. Mm-hmm.
Get, you know, the phone away from the belly, right?
Yeah.
Like I've seen women with the phone sitting on their stomach. It's like, don't do it.
Oh yeah. Well, and the metabolic illness too, it kills me to see, you know, children that less than the age of 10 and they're already, you know, diabetic and everything. It's like, it's so much harder to ever achieve any, you know, sense of metabolic health when you're starting out that way. And,
right.
you know, the science just keeps, it's like, how much science do we need before we wake up? Like, you know, that's the thing. Like, science is my whole career, But I'm also a common sense guy. And I'm like, how much science do we need before we're going to wake the hell up?
Realize, exactly.
Like, yeah. We shouldn't need that much science to be like, oh, we're doing something really, really wrong here. Because even like, you know, there's really cool research going into how like metabolic illness in the mother changes the epigenetics of the child. And it sets them up for a life of metabolic challenges, yeah. You know? So it's like, man, you're getting shot in the foot before you're even like starting, entering the world. Like,
I know.
Sucks.
That's tough. Well, thank you for answering that. Now we're going to move on to the next question. So you have one of your posts that I found really interesting. It's a little cycle and you had it, you had the little picture there. Inflammation causes nervous system dysregulation and nervous system dysregulation causes inflammation. What do we do in that situation?
Yeah. it's all these like chicken or the egg sort of exactly. situations. Cause I mean, that's what kind of kills me with the work that I do is, and I don't know if I should even say it. It's almost like people kind of don't stand a chance. Like that's what worries me. And that's what gets me out of bed. That's what motivates me to do the work that I do and, you know, share the free education that I do, because otherwise I don't think people stand a chance. And, you know, unfortunately I see this divide with, especially through social media where, you know, people, once they've kind of gotten onto this idea of like, I am unwell, I need to heal, I need to self-heal, I need to do something about it. And then they usually kind of split into one of two camps of either more the esoteric, quantum, psychological, psycho-emotional, like, all right, I'm going to sit with my inner wounded child and I'm going to tickle my vagus nerve until it, you know, whatever activates and I'm going to learn how to, yeah. being facetious and regulate my nervous system and everything, you know, or they kind of do the other thing where they sort of bypass all the inner work and they're just like, no, it's not my fault. Like I just have some mysterious root cause. And once I find that root cause with the right tests and then throw the right, you know, protocol at it, and then it all goes away and my life gets better. And it's like, well, actually it's all of it. Like it's all the above. And I think people get so lost in their own little interests and pursuits where, well, how do I regulate the nervous system? But there is that vicious cycle where, yeah, inflammation activates the HPA axis and HPA axis drives more inflammation. So it becomes this asinine pursuit to try to figure out why it started or how it started, or, you know, we're thinking of it too simplistically when in reality, we need to more address everything holistically. You know, returning to the foundations of you take this person that's so caught up in their own, you know, self-destructive narratives and like, oh, well, I have to consume all the free content on the internet and integrate and implement none of it. And it's like, take that person, just pull them out of all that, you know, go stick them like in nature where they're hiking every day, they're eating just clean organic food, they're close to the earth, they're in sunshine, they're laughing, they're disconnected from this hypochondriac monkey mind of something's wrong with me and I have to just heal, and it's all about me and I can't show up for my life until I heal. And enough. Like it's like people don't believe that the basics actually work as well as they do, right? And, you know, I look at the lifestyle that I live and, you know, it would take me a while to explain it, but I live an impeccably healthy lifestyle. I'm extremely fit. Dude. My, you know, diet is impeccable. My sleep hygiene, everything is very on point. And it's like, that's it. You know, sure, I also take a lot of supplements and whatever, but it's the big rocks analogy. And any health coach should have been taught this at some point where it's like, you know, people are so worried about the pebbles in the sand. But do you know the big rock analogy? You know what I'm talking about? Right. You have the bucket and you got to get the big rocks in place. Then you pour in the pebbles, then the sand, then the water, if you're trying to fill the volume of the bucket. And the problem is these days, everybody's trying to do it the other way around, right? They're so caught up in the details. And the foundation isn't there. The big rocks are not in place. The big rocks are your diet, your exercise, your sleep, you know, stress management, time in nature, time with loved ones. Get those big rocks in place consistently before you get too caught up on details. There's no point in chasing root causes if the foundation is cracked.
Right. You know, and it's really good that you're talking about this. And it sometimes for some people, but you always talk about accountability. And that's so important. Now, I'm going to throw a curveball. Moi, I try to lead a healthy lifestyle. I've cut down. I've done the intermittent fasting. I overdid it and I kind of broke my metabolism working 7 days a week, working out once I was given the green light because I had a herniated disc. And so for someone like me, for example, because I know some of my listeners are probably in that situation, I try to lead the lifestyle. I do walk. I train 3 times a week. I just started following a program a few months ago because I was doing weight training, but not a program. So I think that might help. The sleep has always been my culprit. I believe somewhere in my growing up, my mom had a business and we stayed up late, whatever. But also when I worked in corporate, I worked at night. So I've been trying to work on that, on those circadian rhythm regulation. And going out there in the morning is the first thing to do. Sunlight is so crucial. That has been actually the paramount or one of the best things I've done to help with circadian rhythm regulation. So where I'm going with this is for someone who struggles with, let's say, weight, for example, for me, even though I'm active, I love to work out. I'm walking out there every day, even 17 degrees, almost every day. What would you recommend for someone who's trying it all, but it doesn't quite get there yet? Do I need a little more discipline? Do they need a little bit more? Like, what do you think would be a good place to start to see results?
Yeah. I mean, this is where like through my institute and, you know, I'm training practitioners of how to onboard a new client or patient, and we have to take everything into account. And I'm really big on being objective and data driven, because I think the healing journey or health goal pursuit or whatever we want to call it, if it's too subjective, we don't know what's working and what's not. We have to be very scientific in our approach, very structured. Dude. Lack of structure of a healing program or health and fitness program or whatever, lack of structure is what kills success, right? Because at the end of the day, it's lifestyle change, it's behavior modification. In order to change behaviors, we have to change belief systems. We have to develop skills. We have to quite literally build new neural networks associated with new belief systems and new skills that move our physiology closer to what we're trying to accomplish. Mm-hmm. So there's so many things that we have to take into account with, well, what are they currently doing? Where are they trying to get? You know, what timeline are they trying to get there? So there's so much psychological coaching that goes into it, as well as physiology, where, you know, from the beginning of my career, I've always been big on, like, you know, even from day one as personal trainer and nutrition coach, the vast majority of my clients were weight loss clients, right? So it's like, great. So what's your goal? Well, I want to lose weight. Okay. Do you want to lose weight and feel better? Do you just want to lose weight? I could chop your arm off. Like, that would take off a few pounds. You know, so you have to break it down. You have to really break down into specifics and how are we going to measure success? How are we going to qualify success? Because of course, as a lot of individuals wanting to lose weight, they're thinking in their head, well, I'll gauge success based on the scale, right? And if that scale is going down, I'm succeeding. And if it's not, I'm a failure, right? And it's like, okay, well, that's a horribly grotesque way of assessing progress. So even as an 18-year-old, I recognized that, which is why I was like, no. So we're going to use, you know, a $10,000 bioelectrical impedance scale to accurately measure their body fat percentage. We're going to do metabolic testing so I can assess their VO2 or the maximum amount of oxygen their body is capable of utilizing during exercise, their resting metabolic rate, and determining their respiratory quotient. So I know, are they burning fat or sugar at rest, which we should be burning fat. Most are burning sugar. I would do blood work. So I have their basic chemistry, because it's like, you know, hey, Mr. and Mrs. Client, I guarantee you, like, your lipids, your liver enzymes, your blood sugar, your insulin, your leptin, your cholesterol, you know, a lot of your blood work is going to shift before we ever see the scale change. Your body composition and body fat percentage is going to shift before the number on the scale changes or you feel different in your clothes. You know, so my point being, it's not until we really get hard data in the baseline and assessing what are they currently doing and what resonates with them. Because if it's not sustainable,
you're not going to succeed.
Mm-hmm. Right. So that's the thing, is people want that, like, well, what's the easy way to start, or what's the secret, or whatever. And it's like, no, there are no secrets. It's assess data, change something, make some sort of interventional change, whether it's you go from walking, you know, 2000 steps a day to now you're walking 5000 steps a day. You go from not at all being mindful of your nutrition and now you're food logging. So again, we have to change the paradigm of we're changing the day-to-day behaviors while monitoring data. And the data will tell us objectively if we're doing the right things and shifting your physiology. And a lot of times the psychology is going to kind of trail behind that, because that's what I love about lab testing, is being able to objectively show somebody, like, whether you think you're making progress or not is kind of irrelevant. The data tells us we're moving in the right direction. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't lie. Like, your VO2 is going to get better first. Your strength is going to get better first. Your blood chemistry is going to get better first. So then you can use that to reinforce and give the person the sense of reward that their neurolimbic system requires to then solidify those new neural networks associated with this new lifestyle. That's how we ultimately get long-term sustainable behavior modification. But it's ultimately, I think, the data and data tracking, it keeps us honest, it keeps us on course. And I think that's where a lot of people go wrong, is they're not data tracking. They're not being scientific in their pursuit. And they just, you know, are monkey minding it and freaking out of like, well, I don't feel different. And it's been 2 months. It's like, you know, do some of these healthy lifestyle habits for a decade consistently.
Yes.
And then tell me if you're not making progress, right?
Yeah, that's not enough. Yeah. You know, it's and also that with the it's so hard, and a lot of the testing strategies are so obsolete in the conventional health system, right? So I was just listening to you. I don't think I've ever been tested for my VO2. Like, and that would be phenomenal. I just figured, oh my God, you know, because that's connected to lungs, whatever, but that will be another podcast. Thank you so much for answering that, Brandon. And let's move on to the next question. So the microbiome and trauma. So the health of your microbiome directly influences how susceptible or resilient you will be to the effects of trauma. That was another one of your posts. And I thought that was so incredibly interesting. The health of your mind. So you react, you explain it.
Yeah, absolutely. And this will probably be the last question I'll be able to do for today, but the microbiome directly influences the nervous system and our neurological tissues really quite profoundly. In fact, the short chain fatty acids that a healthy microbiome should be producing adequately. And I see this, so like many, many millions of people have very poor microbiome health, very poor microbiome diversity and short chain fatty acid production. And these short chain fatty acids have so many impacts on all of our physiological systems, especially the immune system in the brain in particular, which is kind of where the mental health and neuroinflammation piece comes in. So the thing about trauma, psychological trauma, psychoemotional trauma, you can kind of think of it as, it's like an energetic, emotional injury to the brain. It actually is kind of similar mechanistically to a TBI or a concussion. It has similar physiological effects. So, you know, if you're a football player and you slam heads and you have a concussion, and, you know, that's a physical injury. That's like a bruise to the brain that activates this microglial neuroinflammatory response. The thing that we're learning about psychoemotional trauma is it actually kind of elicits a similar reaction as a physical injury would. You know, it is this more energetic, emotional injury that still kind of causes almost like a brain bruise, which is a simple way of putting it. But it does still activate the immune system in the brain, the microglial cells, that then causes this neuroinflammatory, neurotoxic cascade that then can cause neuronal damage and mental illness and neurodegeneration at times if that gets out of control. So this is where the microbiome has such a large regulatory effect on that immune system of the brain that, like, let's say, you know, you have one person, you know, twins, or I don't know, two people, one has a really healthy microbiome and the other has a really unhealthy microbiome. The person with the healthy microbiome is going to have less of a trauma response to a traumatic event than the person with a really poor microbiome health, right?
Oh, wow.
Because of the way that the microbiome is influencing the activation of that immune system in the brain, essentially. So it kind of dampens the effect, if you will. The trauma isn't going to cause as much damage because we have a healthy microbiome that's kind of mitigating that, buffering that to some degree.
Gotcha. Brandon, do you have 2 minutes for questions that they send a million, but I'm just going to condense it to, I think, most of the most important ones, just like two questions, sure. If you don't mind. So one of them, I think, was pretty interesting. It said, I get these symptoms where I feel like my autoimmune nervous system switches to manual. So I feel like I do have to swallow, breathe, or eye blink manually. Is that connected to?
So that's kind of like a autonomic nervous system dysregulation type of question where, like, I get what they're saying.
Like, what are the symptoms connected to? You said nervous system dysregulation. I guess that's where they're trying to get at.
Yeah. But the thing is, like, it's kind of like somebody that's too caught up in their own head a little bit, to be honest, right? Where it's like, they are reporting that they feel like they have to think about swallowing or blinking. Well, that's because you're thinking about it. You don't actually have to, you know, those are all involuntary movements like peristalsis and breathing and blinking. Like, our body's going to do that whether you're thinking about it or not. So that sounds like somebody that's fixating on it a little too much. And I think they need to, why are they fixating on that? What are they spiritually bypassing? And they're fixating on this and believing it to be a symptom when there's probably a lot of other things going on in their life and in their reality that probably needs a little bit more focus than them worrying about, oh, I have to think about swallowing because
they, you know. Oh, wow, that's interesting. That's very interesting. The other one was like anxiety, panic related to travel and being away. I posted this from home, never wanted to take any meds. I think it was anxiety, panic related to travel and being away from home. I guess I'm experiencing anxiety, panic related when I'm away from home and I don't want to take medication.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like a agoraphobia sort of thing going on there. Again, and this is where, like, look, I mean, people are so caught up in their own depression and anxiety and a lot of times kind of self-induced suffering and why, right? And so that's where there's the psychoemotional work that has to get done and kind of getting to those root cause factors that create self-limiting belief systems and the sense of anxiety and whatever. But then there's the physiological contributors to the anxiety where it's like, well, the more inflamed and oxidized their brain is, the worse the symptom of anxiety is really going to be, right? Mm-hmm. So that's where it's like you have to kind of dismantle both of what factors are causing or what physiological factors are contributing to the prevalence of the anxiety or the depression or whatever it is in their nervous system versus what are the belief systems and false narratives that are causing that sense of anxiety too. So, you know, that's where I'm a big fan of, you know, working with a psychotherapist or doing psychedelic work or meditation or yoga, or whatever it is that grounds them and brings them closer to their core truth, but also optimizing their physiology and metabolic health so that way their brain isn't on fire, because you can do all the inner work you want, but if your brain's on fire, you're still going to be anxious and depressed. So it kind of takes a combination of both.
Excellent. Last one, and then we're going to go into how they can get in touch with you. How does low T testosterone affect mental health?
I mean, pretty directly. And I think, you know, I would say low testosterone is really more of like a symptom related to environmental toxicity and metabolic illness more than anything else. So it's just kind of like yet another physiological perturbation related to the big picture of toxic environment, pro-inflammatory, sedentary lifestyle. So, I mean, we're going to fix a lot of it by cleaning up the environment, cleaning up our lifestyle. But yes, I mean, low testosterone directly plays into depression. It alters our dopaminergic system in the brain. So, you know, low testosterone, high estrogen is a huge endocrine issue in our country. And it's primarily driven by chronic inflammation, and which is really caused by the lifestyle and the environment primarily.
Gotcha. How can they get in touch with you, Brandon? Also, Brandon has a phenomenal free guide that you could, I'm going to link it in the his page that I created on my website. How can they get in touch with you and also the free guide that you're offering in your program for practitioners?
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate it. Probably the best way to kind of connect is follow along at the Holistic Savage on Instagram. That's my main platform. And then I have my link tree, which is just the little link in the profile bio. And, you know, everything that I have to offer, it can be found through that link tree. So, you know, and if it's not in the link tree, I don't offer it. You know what I mean? So link tree is where everything is. So free guides, resources, podcasts, courses, just everything.
Excellent. The latest project that you're working on, why don't you tell us a little bit about that so they know what it is about and where they could find it?
Yeah, the big thing consuming my life these days is the Functional Mental Health Practitioner Certificate Program. So this is an advanced clinical training program for doctors, clinicians, nutritionists, health coaches, any sort of functional medicine professional that wants to really be working with mental health and metabolic health at more of a root cause level. So it's a massive program. It's a year long. It's shaping up to be probably close to 200 hours in length. It's extremely dense, advanced in nature, very science lab testing. It's absolutely huge. So that's really becoming like taking over my life currently, but I'm good with it. You know, it's just hard to keep up with everything.
I know it's so hard. I'm working on a digital course myself to reverse GERD as a reflex natural, like I did. So guys, actually, Brendan, thank you so much for your time, for sharing your knowledge with us. You are definitely part of the shift, the paradigm, and I am so happy and honored to have you on my podcast. Thank you so much again, and I hope I could have you on the podcast again.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We can do that sometime. I appreciate having me. It was a great conversation, and it's always a pleasure, Astrid. So I hope the audience enjoys the episode.
Oh, they absolutely will. All right. You have yourself a wonderful day, and I hope to see you soon.
Sounds good. You too. Thank you.
Hey, guys. So today may be your lucky day. I am going to be picking one lucky reviewer, and they'll get a bag of organic turmeric. So you could make all that golden paste and all that good stuff. So again, one lucky reviewer, you could leave a review either on iTunes, your favorite podcast channel, or also on Podchaser. So go ahead and leave a review. Today might be your lucky day.